Good morning, everyone. This is the NBC Newsroom in New York. Here is news on late developments abroad, brought to you by our staff correspondents in London and Berlin. We take you first to London.
This is London, Ed Dorey speaking. Most of the news of the Russo-German war this morning comes from the Soviet High Command, which issued its second communique on the dot at 4 a.m., exactly 48 hours after fighting began. The ready admission that the Germans captured the towns of Brest-Litovsk, Kolno, and Lomza in eastern Poland, and Shavi in Lithuania, indicates that the Red Army is fighting a delaying action and does not seriously intend to defend these territories occupied by agreement with Germany at the outbreak of the war. The fighting is proceeding on the old, flat, sandy stamping ground of the German and Russian armies in the last war. Those who have traveled from Warsaw to Moscow by train will remember seeing the rusty barbed wire entanglement, the sandy trenches, and the crumbling dugouts of 25 years ago. Vast areas of already impoverished soil were laid waste then and never brought back into cultivation. The princely Polish landlords who owned 10,000 acres of this brush could make only a fair living. It is open warfare country, ideal for tanks. Except for this central and northern Polish front, the Red High Command stated that the German assault was either held or, as in southern Poland, repulsed by counterattacks which drove the Germans back across their frontier. 300 Nazi tanks, it is claimed, were destroyed, and 76 German aircraft shot down the first day and 61 on the second. 5,000 prisoners were taken. It is doubtful, however, whether the German attack has yet developed in force. Colossal bombing raids on all towns and concentrations several hundred miles in the path of the German drive are still going on in an attempt to accelerate the advance of tanks and motorized infantry. The British press this morning is unanimous in exhorting the people not to slacken the war effort. The Times goes into great detail with suggested methods of increasing production, especially by decentralization of supply control so that thousands of small industries in out-of-the-way places might be utilized to make parts of airplanes and guns. Not by a man or a gun, the paper says, does the German attack on Russia lessen the vast need of our own mobilization for war. There is no justification whatever for the view that we can afford to depend in any degree for our salvation on the fact that there are now ranged side by side with a great nation of great resources. No effort can be relaxed, no preparation slackened. The weight of the German war machine is so much greater than ours that now and for months to come, we will only be making up leeway. The Times then pleads for regional industrial commissioners to ascertain the productive capacity and then to harness all small factories and workshops in their district. The Daily Telegraph notes that German hopes of provoking internal splits in the Allied countries by attacking Russia have fallen completely flat. Hitler's attempt to dress up the issue as a fight of civilization against Bolshevism, the paper says, has been met with a storm of contempt and disgust. Hitler is beaten forever in his attempt to confuse the issue. Like the Polish government, which last night worked out a formula for burying its hatred of Russia, the empire as a whole is rallying to the stand which Mr. Churchill took Sunday night. Mr. Menzies, the Australian premier, announced that Mr. Churchill's statement was completely accepted by the Australian government. The Turkish government has now made it plain that the Anglo-Turkish treaty stands first, in fact, in Turkey's engagement. The desire to render all moral and material support to Russia, because she is now fighting the main enemy, is seen also in the official announcement that Sir Stafford Cripps is returning to Moscow as ambassador as fast as possible. The most effective aid the British can give the Russians at the moment is the bombing of German industrial objectives. For the 13th night in succession, the RAF bombed western and northwestern Germany. It was said to have been a very heavy attack. The Germans contented themselves with limited activity over England, but they launched a blitz attack on a British convoy in the English Channel before dawn this morning. German bombers were supported by long-range guns from the French coast. Bombs dropped into the sea, and shell bursts rocked the English coast, but not a single ship was even damaged. There is to be an issue of sugar for jam to be made at home in time for the forthcoming stone fruit crop. Lord Wilton made this welcome announcement, but he did not say how much sugar would be allowed for this home jam making. I return you now to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
And that was one of the members of the NBC reportorial staff in London, Ed Doyce, giving us the latest news from the English capital. For our next report, we hear direct from Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is Charles Lanius in Berlin. While the German armies are reported to be pushing forward in the east, the general picture of the war has shown no startling developments. But reports coming in indicate that the Germans are making good progress along most of the long front. The River Bug, which separated the German part of Poland from the Russian part, has been crossed in several places, and the Germans are said to be pressing forward. German and Romanian troops are in Bessarabia and are said to be approaching the old Russian frontier. From the north, news is vague, but a report from Kaunas, which couldn't be confirmed on the Wilhelmstrasse, says that a new Lithuanian government was formed at noon today. During the night, small red forces entered Germany, but it's said that they were driven back before damage was done. The Russian losses in the air are said to be tremendous, but so far, an official German air report hasn't been released. It's announced here today that Bulgaria is to take over the handling of German interests in Moscow. Until now, the Soviet government has no representation here, although it's estimated that more than 300 Russian officials and businessmen are still in Berlin. Whatever the outcome of this new war being fought on the rolling steppes and around the vast marshlands of Russia by two of the biggest armies ever put into a battlefield since the beginning of time, one thing seems certain. It is rapidly developing into one of the most colorful spectacles the world has ever seen. Although military movements, the aims and strategy of the armies in action can't be talked about, at least on this side, there is apparently no ban on the local color stories of individual operations being broadcasted by the German soldier reporters from the front. Actually, these propaganda company men, the PK boys they're called here, are the only real war correspondents of this war. They are on the spot and apparently are dishing the news out and it's being made. We who sit in Berlin and have to use the report secondhand might as well be in another world as far as first-hand knowledge is concerned. In previous campaign, foreign newsmen have been taken on carefully conducted tours of conquered territories and are shown the scene of battle days after the real thing has already been written into history. It'll probably be the same way this time. But the German PK men can work differently. I know some of the men and have listened to their casual stories about their experiences. In the first place, they travel as a military unit. They have their own cars, trucks, supplies, moving picture apparatus, and radio equipment. And in most cases, have special courier aeroplanes. Most of the men are experienced reporters. They have been taken from civil life, put into uniforms, and assigned to more exciting and more dangerous jobs. Whenever an action is started, the men are assigned to various attacking detachments. They go wherever the fighting is and take whatever the other troops get. A good number of them get killed. Only recently I saw a private showing of a film taken of a bridge-storming action in the Balkan campaign. A cameraman was grinding away getting pictures of the German engineers who worked under fire. Suddenly a shell lopped over and exploded, blowing the photographer to bits. Another cameraman to the rear recorded the whole event. When the explosion occurred, he kept right on winding the film. The men I know tell me it's only part of the game. They like it. Sometimes they'll go along with a tank brigade or speed troops or with bombing squadrons, anywhere to get a colorful story. Their biggest trouble, I'm told, comes from having too much zeal. Like any reporter, the propaganda man wants to tell all about it. And there's where the difficulty lies, with the high command. Names and locations can't be mentioned. There are a number of these companies on the long eastern front, and it's from them that most of this news we're getting now comes. Today, a story from the front tells how German infantry units broke through red fortifications at one point. The Russian resistance was stubborn, and the action lasted 10 hours. The German soldiers are credited with taking five bunkers and field positions at important strategic points before going on to take the key town of the district. When the German mortars and hand grenades had driven the Soviets from their pillboxes, the infantry crossed open fields where the Russians were waiting for them in houses and behind walls. The Germans are said to have stormed the outskirts and got into the center of the town where the Reds were massed. There, bitter hand-to-hand fighting took place. But the PK men say that the Russians were wiped out completely. Bunkers in the rear of the town were shelled and put out of action. Then, according to the German report, there was no holding the Reds. The ones who didn't surrender threw down their arms and fled into the surrounding woods. The whole area is now in German hands, the report adds. In the West, the British had a bad day in the air, according to the Germans. The British are said to have lost a total of 22 planes for the day. During the night, the Royal Air Force was again over Western Germany. But the Germans report that only slight damage was done to buildings and property. This is Charles Lanius in Berlin. I now return you to NBC in New York.
And that's the latest news on the war. Now, Earl Godwin reports from our newsroom in Washington.
Good morning, folks. I come here to the microphone this morning with a distinct feeling that your nation's statesmen, as gathered here under the Great White Dome and other places, are no more deeply endowed with knowledge and wisdom at this particular moment than the old-timers around the wood stove and the cracker barrel in Bailey's Crossroads store, for instance, because really all that Washington has produced since President Roosevelt gave Russia the go sign yesterday is conversation. That statement, by the way, that was read by Acting Secretary of State Sumner Welles was a Roosevelt statement. Mr. Welles, acting as Secretary of State in the absence of Cordell Hull, who has simply worn himself out with overwork, Welles simply read the statement. But it started a lot of argument, of course, here and near here. In general, the statement told Russia to come and get it if Stalin needs anything. But so far, we haven't heard a word from Russia, either from the Russian government or from any of our own diplomatic establishments. The reason is, of course, communications are hard to maintain in times like these, so our government can say truly, all we know is what we hear on the radio. The statement from Mr. Welles is a truly international and diplomatic statement, for it smeared the so-called ideological concepts of the Nazis and the Reds, but left untouched the thing that is worrying a section of Congress, and that is the communist, the Russian communist, in the fifth columns here in America. Already, the Republicans have opened up on that. Representative Joe Martin of Massachusetts, Republican floor leader, put into a speech that he delivered out at Bloomington, Illinois, late last night, these words, and I'll quote a sentence or two. We have those among us who are hostile to our ideals. For 8 years, there have been too much coddling of communists. They have been entertained, dined by high officials. They have been encouraged to flourish in our schools, our labor organizations, and in the government itself. As the Senate slipped an extra $500 million for air and aviation purposes into the Army's huge $10 billion appropriation bill for next year, General George Marshall, tall, sedate, smiling chief of staff, said yesterday that some selectees would probably remain in the Army more than the original year. Of course, an act of Congress would be required to force that on the selectees, but as I have reported to you previously, any soldier, I think, can stay voluntarily if the Army asks for volunteers. We want the selectees to go home on schedule, said the general, but in any event, we'll have to keep some on. The reason, as he explained, is that we have widespread, far-flung defenses to man, and it is stretched out pretty far, and as he explained it, it is very difficult for a man who lives in Florida, for instance, to have to go and come to the Aleutian Islands for training or for the actual purposes of defense, and therefore a year isn't long enough. Tinkering away at the proposed next year's income tax bill, the House Ways and Means Committee yesterday went after about $117 million more in estate taxes. That's about one-third as much as the Treasury had recommended. In a series of soaks that would have been much more in certain instances than the similar taxes in war-torn Britain, it was just too appalling to the members of the House Committee who shut their eyes and slashed off two-thirds of the Treasury's recommendations. And that's all from Washington at this time.
And that's the latest news at home and abroad. During the past quarter hour, you've heard from our correspondents in London, Berlin, and Washington. This is the National Broadcasting Company.